across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday, August 25th. And it's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or by app, podcast, or social media. Glad to have you here in the state of Wiscommon Sense, where we're going to unpack the news and the spin's going to get unspun. Here's what's on tap this morning. Inmate number P0113850999, with apologies to Tommy Two-Tone, Jenny's phone number of 867-5309 has been replaced with Donald Trump's new inmate number from the Fulton County Jail, where he was booked last evening. It made for a lot of attention, a lot of headlines. There's going to be a lot of artwork done with that mugshot, but let's not lose sight here of the very real and very sad issue at the heart of all this. An American president tried to lie, cheat, and steal his way into staying in power after the voters said no. We'll also do some Friday morning quarterbacking of the GOP debate among the non-Trump candidates, and we'll ask Kia Vakil if one is ready to step up if Trump's trials take him out of the race. And sadly, we're not done talking about Republican interference in elections or investigations into election interference, both in Madison and Washington, D.C. At the state level, state senators are pushing ahead with an illegal effort to fire the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. We will talk to Henry Redman of the Wisconsin Examiner about that. And in D.C., House Republicans have announced an investigation into the Atlanta district attorney investigating Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election, same as they've done by targeting prosecutors, judges, law enforcement, and the FBI in New York and elsewhere for trying to hold Trump accountable for his illegal actions. We'll talk to our usually Friday friends, Mark Jacob. We'll talk about national media coverage of the debate and the Trump arrest. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports. We'll get that weatherology forecast, most likely from meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki, and Brewers tickets. We are giving away two tickets today to Sunday afternoon's game at American Family Field. That'll be the Brewers versus the Padres Sunday afternoon. We're going to give you a Brewers trivia question at about 6:50. And just a heads up, we have a packed music break and history lesson segment at 6:50. A lot of tunes, a lot of birthdays, and Brewers tickets. So you're going to have to strap in and hold on when we get to that point. Along the way, of course, the phone lines are open for your input at 844-967-2789. You can also email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Those of you watching the live feed of this on social media, if you put a comment on one of the Facebook pages where we're broadcasting, we'll see it and might put your comment up on the screen here. Or you can text us, not only at the phone number, but through the Civic Media app, and we'll see that as well. We'll tell you more about what Up North News is covering in this morning's newsletter and beyond in just a moment. But first, let's head down to Madison to the Civic Media Control Center, where Aaron Zommers is standing by, where Aaron and I are both ready to be done with this week. Fair to say?
Yep. And I was just giving my best impression of the Donald Trump mugshot there. It's not you can't tell because I don't look like him at all, but which I am thankful for.
It's it obviously has gone everywhere. So far, my favorite has been, what is the album name by Queen, and just has the four heads, you know, kind of in a diamond shape against a dark background. And then, of course, they've added Trump's in there as well. I've seen a couple of other album covers about it. Of course, it's been on T-shirts. It's going to be every place. It's even on Donald Trump's Twitter account. He reactivated his Twitter account just for that, to put his mugshot on there and raise money, of course.
Of course he did. My favorite thing I've seen so far is a little compilation talking about the Kubrick stare is one of Stanley Kubrick's most recognizable directorial techniques, where you have a character staring directly at the camera with their head tilted forward to show that they're at the peak of their derangement.
Oh, that's at their derangement. Oh, very good. All right. Well, I'm glad we have cracked the code on that one. So we'll have more to say about that coming up in just a bit. Let's check some 6 a.m. temperatures around the state of Wisconsin right now. Here in Lake Wissota, it is 68 and heading to 84. Just a cooler, much more seasonal day today. Madison is at 70 on its way to 82. Folks listening in Waukesha, you're at 64 degrees right now, heading to 78. La Crosse is going to be about 15 degrees cooler today at 72 now, on their way to 86. And Wausau, about the same as yesterday, 68, on the way to 82. And again, full details of the forecast coming up. I've mentioned previously that Up North News has finally achieved a level of capitalism that we've often aspired to. And that, of course, would be merchandise. So we have T-shirts and we have tote bags available. The T-shirts say things like, you know, am I up north right now? And Wisconsin needs local news, a definition of bubbler, beer, cheese, and voting rights. The tote bag, I'm going to hold up over here, not in front of my microphone. Tote bag says fascists hate facts. And that's actually from our parent company, Courier Newsroom, right there. So the tote bag is available as well. So head over to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com, and click store in the top banner. I know I talked Dr. Lyerly into purchasing something because I need somebody other than me to be the celebrity spokesmodel modeling the shirts. Aaron, you wear different shirts every day. You could probably be one of our T-shirt models.
Yeah, I haven't bought any yet, but I'm going to.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't get to use my employee discount because they told me about it like an hour after I bought the things. So maybe I'll just share that with you and we'll get you the discount and get you a shirt or two here. Very quick Brewers update, weather forecast, and then we'll unpack the news coming up here on Up North News Radio for this Friday morning. Wherever you're listening across the state of Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back. Notice we didn't cue this one up to the chorus because we haven't yet asked the folks over at Tommy Two Tone to re-record it as P0113850999, which is Donald Trump's new inmate number from his booking last night. We'll talk about that in just a sec. First, a very quick update on the Milwaukee Brewers because they were off yesterday, starting a three-game series against the San Diego Padres this weekend as they head into the final roughly 35 games or so of the 2023 season. You can catch the games this weekend on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM, or News from the Center and Richland Center 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. And we're going to be giving away tickets just about a half hour from now, two tickets to Sunday afternoon's game against the Padres. We would love to give those away. It's going to be a little Brewers trivia question for you. So tune in and get that. Again, our phone number here is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. If you'd like to comment on anything like the Trump arraignment or any of the other things that are in the news today, you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron, normally this is a short break before we get into unpacking the news. Usually I just keep my butt here, but I had finished all my coffee from my one and only Up North News mug that I'm holding up for the social media audience here. And I don't normally get up during that break because it's a quick one, but I had to get a splash more coffee. I've now opened up the house up here on the lake because the stifling humidity has passed and realized that in the process, I've probably let in several mosquitoes.
Ooh.
And as I've got the coffee mug on the stovetop, got a ceramic stovetop, and I'm filling it and I see a mosquito flying under the range hood. And so I tap my hand upward, kind of squish the mosquito against the top of the range hood. And I see, much like Prigozhin's plane, the mosquito just plunges down and crashes into my coffee cup along with lots of other dust, because apparently we don't clean that thing nearly as often as we need to. So I've got a little extra protein in my coffee because I had to get back here, it being a short commercial break. So if you hear me later catching encephalitis or dengue fever or chikungunya or something, you'll know it's from this little sip right here.
At least I probably won't get malaria because we're not in Florida.
Yeah, see, I got that going for me, which is nice. Yesterday, when the show was over on Thursdays, we have shows all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And for Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau, that would be Chad Holmes. So Chad's got the show from 8 to 10. followed by Kristen Bry in As Goes Wisconsin. But Chad on Thursdays has me on during the first half hour of his show, a little crossover like we have him on Tuesday, or, you know, Todd Alba, we visit each other's shows on Wednesday. Well, anyway, Chad brought up a point about the debates yesterday that I thought was maybe worth sharing here as well. And I'm a little surprised it didn't occur to me, because I was trashing the notion of there being an audience there, you know, a live audience that was jeering and, you know, people going for the applause lines and all of that. And I wanted the format fixed. Chad went all the way there. He said to his audience, have the debates worn out their usefulness? Would we be better off if we didn't have these spectacles? And I understand why you would put that question out there and say, you know what, it's not even worth it. We're not even getting anything out of it. I don't know that I would go that far, but I'd like to know what you think. Because after all, even though I think an estimated 12 million people watched the debate Wednesday night, that's still, you know, a sliver of the full U.S. population. And really, how many of those 12 million people changed their votes or their assessment of somebody based on what they saw for those 2 hours on Wednesday night? Now, that number might be enough that it makes these debates worthwhile, but you might disagree. And I just wonder what you think about that. Do we keep the debates or do we not? I'm going to stand with my answer that I would like to continue to have a way for multiple candidates to be together and to engage with each other. But clearly the format has to change in some way, shape, or form. And it could be, again, just better discipline one at a time on the responses. It could be, much like I've said about a lot of live coverage nowadays, especially in the age of Trump, maybe the time has come not to have live coverage, but go live to tape and then play back the tape right away so that you have time to fact check it. And maybe that's what you do, is you gather all the candidates together. Because again, we didn't always have everything live instantaneously all the time. I'm still one of those old enough to remember that whether it was the Indy 500 or Wimbledon or even the Miracle on Ice U.S. hockey game in Lake Placid against the Russians, all of those things were not live. They were played back later on, you know, hours later. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we have the technology now and the sense of instant gratification that we feel like we have to have, you know, instant reaction, including audience reaction to things that candidates are saying. When I think if you want audiences cheering, then go to the convention. They still televise the conventions. That's where your audience is. But if I want to learn about the candidates, I'm not going to get that when they're busy insulting each other. I want to hear what their ideas are. But, you know, again, other people may disagree, and I certainly would be interested in your opinion as well. As far as the mugshot goes of Donald Trump and getting booked and getting the system started for what he did in Georgia and how he's being held accountable to it, again, there's a lot that has been said and will be said about, you know, the gaze or the glare that Trump is making. It's very intense in his blue suit and his oversized red tie and everything like that. It raised the point to others that others have made over the years about whether mugshots should be made public. Because, again, when you're arrested, there is, for the legal system, a presumption of innocence, that you're innocent until proven guilty in court. The mugshot ideally is there for identification purposes, if this person somehow gets on the run or something like that, or just to confirm that this is the person who's been booked into the jail. But it has led to that question about whether mugshots are useful in most cases. In this case, I think it makes sense because of not just the level of power that this person once had, but the gravity of the crime. And yeah, I might be in the minority on here, but I still hold these alleged crimes up to levels that rank right up there in crimes of violence. This is not your standard white collar crime. I mean, the first one where Trump was arrested and arraigned, that's a New York State charge of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments to the porn actress Stormy Daniels to cover up an alleged affair from years earlier that she was going to talk about right before the 2016 election. All right, it's a salacious story, but the charges are about falsifying business records. Hardly a crime of passion, something you take seriously, especially in New York, where all these businesses are located. You want to have faith in business records. But when we're talking about what's happening in Georgia, and it is, in my mind, it is arguable, but I'll still contend the Georgia case may rank higher than the federal election tampering case, simply because in Georgia, you've got that infamous phone call. Where, again, Trump is saying, I just need to find votes. Remember, there were no votes to find. They weren't in the middle of counting ballots. The ballots had already been counted. So when he says, find me the votes, he is saying, flip your pencil around, erase those numbers, and write in some new ones, and people will believe you, is what he was saying in that phone call. And that's some serious stuff. I would even argue with, again, no offense to Jack Smith, but his other case might even take greater priority, and that would be the Mar-a-Lago documents case. Nuclear secrets, battle plans, defense plans, information about U.S. spies. And so far, the stories that have come out about Trump's handling of these documents has been comical to troubling, but I still wonder and worry that we're going to find out at some point that he has done something with a kernel of information that is going to, you know, come back and bite us and bite this country badly. That's the trial that actually I'll be paying more attention to the details of it just to see what comes out of it in the end. But you have all four of these cases in front of Donald Trump and a run for president. So he's got to try to squeeze in, you know, rallies and TV interviews, you know, in and amongst all these things. And so you understand why the eight other candidates, despite being far behind Trump in the polls, are still going through the motions of running for president. Because even though Trump says he's not going to accept any plea deals, he's not going to back down. Well, between preparing the cases and the ever-changing court calendars and appearances and things, it's not out of the realm of possibility yet that Donald Trump is not still in the presidential race by the time Republicans come back to Wisconsin and gather at the Fiserv Forum for the Republican National Convention in 2024. And so that's why we'll talk to Kia Vakil in just about 5 minutes here to find out, you know, what his take is on what was said, on the issues that were talked about and were not talked about. And let the independent and Republican voters of Wisconsin weigh in on this. Now, Wisconsin isn't one of the early primary states, but if this race ends up to be, you know, more wide open than it currently seems right now, well, then Wisconsin voters may play more of a role than we're currently thinking that they will. But right now we're watching so many things. We're watching those four Trump trials. We're watching a legislature that may or may not come into special session. And we're watching what apparently is going to be some more mischief by Republicans against the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And now they say that it's all about election integrity. If you believe that, you'll believe Donald Trump when in his booking yesterday, he reported his weight at 215 pounds. I don't weigh 250. I weigh enough more than 215 pounds for me to look at him and say, wow, that's a lot of gall to list that as your weight, you know, but he did. And we have to take the information that they're giving us, like why they're investigating the Elections Commission, why they're trying to switch votes in Georgia, and then we have to let the system play itself out. One other quick note, Dan Schaefer, our friend, notes that during the Republican gatherings this week, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley was spotted at several events there. So I eagerly await Justice Rebecca Bradley's announcement that she's going to recuse herself from all cases involving Republicans, since she is apparently now expecting the same thing of new Justice Janet Protasiewicz. All right, our conversation with Kia Vakil coming up next. You're up north. It is 6:33 on this Friday morning on Up North News Radio. Kia Vakil joins me now, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, who watched the debate and has a story on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, with some insight. And yeah, it's been a couple days back, but again, this was 2 hours long, so you're going to learn some things from Kia that you might not have picked up on the debate. Kia, how are you?
I am well, Pat. A little tired, but hanging in there.
Exactly. Hey, I want to start with this one because it wasn't readily apparent to me, but clearly it was to others. So I'm glad they caught it. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was pretty much expecting to get pounced on because with Trump not there, he would have been the next one that you wanted to try the knockoff in the polls. But, you know, in hindsight, it seems like he, by and large, got ignored by many of the candidates up on that stage. And so, you know, what does that say that they don't fear him anymore, or that they just have bigger fish to fry? What did you make of that?
I think it says two things. I think one, it suggests that his campaign is no longer, you know, the cemented alternative to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. His campaign has flailed. He is third in some polls. The aura of invincibility around him as an alternative to Trump no longer exists. So I think it says that. And I think the second thing it says is that the rest of the candidates hate Vivek Ramaswamy because he was by far the most commanding presence on that stage, the most Trump-like presence on that stage. And to, you know, someone like me who is not a Republican base voter, the most annoying presence on that stage. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those things that, you know, might turn off swing voters or independent voters or you and I are exactly what the Republican base that loves Donald Trump are looking for. And that's what Vivek delivered. And so a lot of the attacks that might have gone against DeSantis were directed at Ramaswamy. You saw him get into a little bit of tiffs with Nikki Haley, with Chris Christie, with Mike Pence. I think that's, you know, he's kind of starting to sneak into the role DeSantis was in.
I'm going to say instead that he is a sideshow, and a sideshow that serves as a placeholder. He's a placeholder for Donald Trump until he decides he wants to be back there insulting people and trying to command the stage. And I get that I'm really minimizing whatever effectiveness he had, you know, on the stage in Milwaukee, but I don't see how he's anything but a placeholder, you know, unless Trump completely goes away.
No, I think that's exactly right. He was, you know, I think if you're looking at it from the perspective of Republican primary voters, he was probably the strongest performer. But all that means is that he is the most like Trump of those eight people. That does not mean Trump is still the OG. He's not going to pull any support from Trump. What he might do is pull a percent or two here from DeSantis or from Nikki Haley or from Tim Scott. Vivek Ramaswamy will not be the president in 2025. What he might be is the vice president or the commerce secretary or, you know, the treasury secretary whatever sort of role he might have, because he's quite clearly, kissing up to Trump. And Trump praised him last night for basically doing exactly that. So he's auditioning for a VP slot or some other slot or to be a 2028 nominee.
So this question is pretty basic for the debate, but I'm going to ask it anyway, that, you know, Trump was mostly, again, ignored by the candidates unless the moderators brought him up, you know, Chris Christie being a notable exception. So not entirely unexpected, but that really does mean there was probably no change in the field in terms of Trump's dominance over everybody collectively. There may have been some movement up and down, you know, among those eight, but there was really nothing that shaved points off of Trump by an Iowa or a New Hampshire voter, right?
No, not at all. I mean, what you saw was 6 of the 8 candidates say they would support Trump as the nominee next November, even if he's convicted of the many crimes he's been charged with. So I don't know how, if you want to unseat Trump, you say, oh, I'll vote for him anyway, even if he's a convicted criminal for trying to overturn an election, helps you do that. It just is deferential to him. The man is going to win the nomination, barring, you know, something completely unforeseen, that, you know, like a pandemic, or, I mean, God forbid, or something worse. But there's just nothing changed. Like you said,
these are all people who have positioned themselves as well. If you know, Donald Trump fell into an open well, you know, or happened to fall into prison between now and then, they're positioning like, we're not going to take him on, but we're here just in case. And I don't think a lot of viewers really, you know, gave the candidates any respect points for that. You had Mike Pence and Nikki Haley and Chris Christie essentially being the, you know, giving the mainstream old line Republican arguments, but Chris Christie's not going to go anywhere. So in my mind, it kind of came down to Nikki Haley versus Mike Pence for your quote unquote traditional Republican voter, not your Trumper. So then my question to you is, if it's Nikki Haley and Mike Pence, is Mike Pence going to be able to build back up his level of support, or has he maxed out and Nikki Haley is the one who's going to surge?
I don't think either of them will. I think Nikki Haley might generate some new interest from donors who maybe were disappointed with Tim Scott, who was basically, you know, a fly on the wall. But they were, in my mind, the strongest performers. But they were debating as if it's the Republican Party of 2012, mm-hmm. not of 2023. And the Republican Party of 2023, as we've already seen in a couple post-debate polls and focus group surveys, they liked Vivek Ramaswamy and apparently Ron DeSantis in second of those 8. So I think Nikki Haley had a very strong night, but she's playing to people who no longer vote Republican. And so I think they addressed the elephant in the room for about 10 minutes, but outside of that basically could have happened in a world where Trump didn't exist. And that's crazy to me, because he's had a stranglehold over this party for, what, we're on eight years right now. Mm-hmm. That just feels like a complete disservice to voters and a waste of time, frankly.
So Tim Scott was, underwhelmed, underperformed some expectations. I will acknowledge that I have watched him speak enough that I did not have particularly high expectations, but I could see why others would. But the question here becomes, can he step it up? Now, he'd have to do it September 27th for the next debate. Is he even capable of doing that, is what I think people are asking.
That's a good question. I mean, Tim Scott is a charismatic, candidate who wants to be, you know, he calls himself like a happy warrior. He tries to avoid going overtly negative against other Republicans. He'll say like truly outlandish things if you have a D next to your name. Mm-hmm. He knows how to play retail politics. He knows how to engage voters. He's good at those things. He is quite clearly not great at the, you know, media angle of it, at the, you know, fighting, the lunatics on stage next to him angle of it. It's totally possible that he could do debate prep and sort of, you know, really lean into some different approaches next month. But I am not sure, again, that it really matters, because until the field really shrinks to like 1 to 2 alternatives to Trump, you have 7 to, I don't even know how many people at this point, 12 other people somewhere in there, some of whom weren't even on stage on Wednesday, who are all polling between 1% and 10%. And that does no one any good if you want to beat Trump. So Tim Scott might be the alternative, but the polls are not suggesting that. And last night did not suggest that.
No. And at this point, Tim Scott is one of the 6 who have qualified for the second debate. We'll get into the qualifications needed for that in just a moment. But sticking with the Milwaukee topics, on the topic of abortion, it sure sounded to me like not just a few candidates, but an entire party that is trying to find its way through an abortion minefield of its own creation.
100%. They are now more than a year into our post-Roe world, and there is no consensus among Republicans of how to tackle this issue because it's a losing issue. We've seen in every single election where it's either been directly or indirectly on the ballot, they've gotten pummeled. In states like Ohio, they lost in Kansas, and I believe in Kentucky. These are not blue states. Abortion rights are popular universally across this country, and they cannot figure out where to go with this. When Nikki Haley, who supports a nationwide abortion ban, and Doug Burnham, who passed one of the most restrictive abortion bans in the country that basically outlaws it completely in North Dakota, when they are the two most reasonable people on the issue on a stage, that says a lot about where the Republican Party is on abortion right now.
Well, so we'll move off abortion, but we have to move into a topic that is, again, equally, I think, out of step with where Americans are. I'm not hearing Americans clamoring for a war with Mexico. And yet we had candidates talking about armed interventions, maybe working with the military, maybe doing it on their own, promising lots of death if you're Ron DeSantis. I guess I knew they were going to bring up the southern border. I knew they were going to say we need more. I knew there'd be ridiculousness like Tim Scott, you know, with the IRS agents as opposed to border agents. But that was a real ratcheting of the rhetoric that we have to find ourselves saying, could the Republicans nominate somebody that would actually send American young men and women, soldiers, into Mexico? I don't even know how to phrase the question because I'm just still stupefied that it's gotten to that point.
Yeah, I mean, things are just in a very stupid place in general with regards to where people stand on Mexico on that stage. DeSantis has previously intimated he might drone strike Mexico. So now he's suggesting he'll, you know, send troops over the border to combat the cartels and the fentanyl labs. And look, obviously, drug cartels are causing enormous damage, especially in Mexico. They are doing horrific things, and the results do trickle over the border. But invading a country that we share a border with does not strike me as a great idea if you want to actually solve the problem. If you want to score points with, you know, some primary voters, okay, yeah, maybe that's a winning message. But I do not imagine that after two decades of endless wars abroad, voters are hungry for another one right at our doorstep. No. And if you actually want to address the crisis, of people seeking a better life at the border, you know, then you got to improve life in Guatemala and in Nicaragua and in Honduras and in Mexico, where a lot of these folks are coming from, not bomb their family members. That's not going to help things.
No, there's just nothing helpful about this kind of rhetoric. All right. Yeah. So we'll do it all again, September 27th at the Ronald Reagan Library in California. So I've already made the case here post-debate that the bar was set too low for the first debate. It's raised a bit for the second one, but it's not raised that much, is it?
No. I think we're still going to have, frankly, too many candidates on that stage. You have to hit, I believe it's 3% in two national polls, or a national poll and two different primary state polls. You can correct me if that's wrong.
Nope, that's got it.
With 50,000 people, so 10,000 more than the candidates already have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, right now we have six candidates qualified, or seven actually, six without Trump, and then two who aren't, Asa Hutchinson and Doug Burgum. They have no business being on that stage, all due respect to those two. They were two of the more reasonable candidates last night, but they don't have a chance in hell. So, you know, we're looking at a DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Chris Christie, and Mike Pence as the six. I still would argue, I mean, that's at the upper limit. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, in an ideal world, you know, unfortunately, probably you would not have Chris Christie or Mike Pence up there because they are not giving anything that Republican voters want to hear.
It would seem that. We saw this in 2016, like when Scott Walker got out of the race. Initially, he was like, hey, we need more of you to quit the race like I did, because, you know, we need to thin the field so somebody emerges against Trump. And then, of course, Trump emerged and they were all like, hey, he's our buddy. He's our pal. Same thing here. If the Republican Party were to say, all right, we're going to raise the threshold to 8%. I think you'd get those people in a room real quick to say, okay, who's in, who's out, because otherwise there's what are we even talking about? Just give Trump the nomination now.
Yeah. I mean, I think if we're, you know, if it's October, if it's 2 months from now and we haven't had significant consolidation, there's no point. You know, there's no reason for both Tim Scott and Nikki Haley to be in this race. They're going for the same voters. Yes. There's no reason for, I mean, Chris Christie and Mike Pence are the two vaguely, I mean, Chris Christie more so, but they're the two anti-Trump alternatives. There's not a room for both of them.
It's the NCAAs, you know, where we talk about, you know, the first ones, last ones in, first ones out. Kia Vakil, thank you so much.
Yo, remember back on The Bully when cats used to harmonize like...
Wop That Thing. Lauryn Hill, a former Fugees member, released her solo album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. It became the first hip-hop album to win the Grammy for Album of the Year this week in 1998. That album was released. All right, I dare say this is going to be our most fully packed history lesson and music break segment. Just a lot of things happened on August 25th, not the least of which is the birth of my first grandchild, Mason. Mason is 17 today. I've been a grandpa for 17 years. That's wild, but he is just the apple of my eye. Mason, happy birthday, even though you won't hear this because you sleep till long past noon now that you're 17. All right, Brewers tickets. Get set to win two of them here. You know the rules. You cannot have won a prize in the month of August. In fact, while I explain the rules, let's listen to Little Eva and keep this going here. Little Eva's song, The Locomotion, hit number one this day in 1962. And so while we hear that in the background, again, you cannot have won a prize in the month of August. Tickets will be emailed to you. And use the tickets. These are great club seats. Here we go. Who was the first Milwaukee Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a single season? The first to call 844-967-2789 with the correct answer will get that. And I'm going to give you multiple choice. First Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a season was either Christian Yelich, Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder, or Gorman Thomas. 844-967-2789. First one with the correct answer and can use tickets. Sunday afternoon's game, Brewers Padres. You will get those. So give Aaron a ring. All right, the number one hit this week in 1979 was by The Knack. So while My Sharona plays in the background, we'll tell you the National Park Service was created on this day in 1916. The singer Ayla and several members of her record company were killed this day in 2001 as their overloaded aircraft crashed shortly after takeoff in the Bahamas. On this day in 2017, Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Texas as a powerful Category 4 hurricane, the strongest to make landfall since 2004. Over the next several days, the storm caused catastrophic flooding throughout much of East Texas, killing more than 100 people and causing $125 billion in damage. The number one song this day in 1973 was by a group called The Stories. Brother Louie's lesson about interracial dating for the time was the number one song for 2 weeks, 50 years ago today. We are still waiting on a correct guess as to who was the first Milwaukee Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a single season. First to call at 844-967-2789. We'll get two tickets to Sunday's game. First Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a single season. On this day in 1970, an unknown 23-year-old singer by the name of Elton John played his first live show in the U.S. at the Troubadour in West Hollywood. The show got rave reviews and gave his career a big boost now that he'd come over from the U.K. to the United States. An album was released this day in 1975 by Bruce Springsteen, just one with a little ditty called Born to Run. A lot of other birthdays today. Composer Leonard Bernstein was born this day in 1918. Gene Simmons of Kiss You've seen the commercials. You know, Kiss is on their farewell tour, going to wrap things up. Crandon is among the final stops. Gene Simmons is 74 years old today. Born in Israel, his mom was a Nazi concentration camp survivor. Rob Halford from Judas Priest was born in England on this day in 1951, making him 72 years old today. And Aaron, I still can't get over seeing Rob Halford just fawning over Dolly Parton at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I thought that was it was adorable, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I feel like she's not only an amazing performing artist, but just a good person.
She was, and Rob cited that as well, and it was fun to hear them jamming up on stage. Well, I gave you an easy trivia question, so apparently a lot of people must be, they have a full dance card for Sunday, but those tickets are still sitting out there at 844-967-2789. First Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a single season is going to win them. Now, catch all these other birthdays, and I didn't do the math beforehand, so I'm going to be doing a lot of this in my head. Let's see, Elvis Costello, born this day in 1954, making him 69 years old. Billy Ray Cyrus is born in Kentucky. He is 62 years old today. Jody Messina, we'll hear her a little bit later on in the program. She is 53 years old today. Actor Blair Underwood is 59 years old. Rachel Ray, the chef and TV host and author, is 55 years old today. And actress and model Blake Lively, born this day in 1987, making her 36 years old today. And one more note, Menudo. Remember the Puerto Rican boy band where it was an ever-changing lineup? So there, all kinds of boys have come through there, and then they age out. On this day in 1984, they released their 16th studio album, Evolution. The album introduced their newest 12-year-old singer, a young man by the name of Ricky Martin. So his shooting to stardom started with the release of that Menudo album on this day in 1984. Aaron, if I would have given you the multiple choice on this Brewers question, I know you know the answer, but if you hadn't seen the answer, would you know it?
I think because it's multiple choice, I would have.
Yeah. So again, and I did want to make it nice and easy for you. Between these Brewers, Christian Yelich, Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder, Gorman Thomas, who was the first Milwaukee Brewer to hit 50 home runs in a season? My phone number is 844-967-2789. And the first one through with a correct answer is going to be able to win that one. Well, Aaron takes a couple of more phone calls here. We went through all of those birthdays mighty fast, but hope you got a chance to catch them, and we'll play a couple of more clips coming up. The daily newsletter that we put together at Up North News is out to hit your email box about 5 o'clock every weekday morning. And it was, again, a case of asking you to fill in the blank. We shared your answers, and then you get a whole new bunch of new answers. So we put one out that said, Wisconsin's best fish fry is blank. We put it out in a newsletter, you know, some weeks back saying, here's what you said is Wisconsin's best fish fry. And here come all the follow-ups going, wait a minute, you forgot about this one or that one. So read a few more of your nominees for the best fish fries in Wisconsin in our newsletter. There's also a preview article from me in there. Next week, we'll be doing several back-to-school stories, including a special edition of the newsletter that looks at parts of going back to school that we all should be concerned about, like why are so many school districts getting fewer of our state tax dollars, even with a $7 billion surplus? So that and more in a special edition of our newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Let's take a break. Much more in our second hour on this Friday morning.